We have some great interviews from the RI conference, as well as an update on polio. That and more coming up next. This is It's Rotary 6040. Fresh, positive news. Brought to you in part by Audible.com. Episode number 28, Walking with Eunice. I typically stay away from news that is not positive in some respect, so forgive me for a minute as I relay some news that may not be so positive. According to the recently released nonprofit Social Benchmark Report, produced by N10, Common Knowledge, and Blackbaud, only 3% of charities raised more than $10,000 on Facebook last year, and less than 1% raised more than $100,000. So does this mean that fundraising online is dead or that social media fundraising is dead? Well, yes and no. The short answer is that the curmudgeons among us are right, but only half right. While it is obvious that social media is not going to raise millions online for your organization, it is obvious that it's not going away. It needs to be part of your overall strategy, one that still has the tried and true print media in it. You heard me, I said print media. That's postcards, flyers, not newspapers. But here's to you, the over 50-somethings among us, who still have some time left to cling to your newspapers, your paper magazines, and postcards in the snail mail. If you had a Google account, I would plus one you. With that in mind, according to Blackbaud's Charitable Giving Index, charitable giving in the U.S. was up 1.5% year-over-year in April. This is the slowest increase in the last 12 months, with March hitting 4.5% year-over-year. That total is for giving of any kind, online and offline. While that may sound like bad news to some, take heart. If you filter out everything, leaving just the small organizations, their gain in April was 19.2% year-over-year. That's the largest gain of the year to date. Now, we've got three great interviews coming up for you today, and I'm going to scatter those around throughout the show, a little bit here, a little bit there, kind of surprise you with them. All three were done by District Governor Dan Hall from District 6040 here in Northern Missouri, so take heart, have fun with it. They're good listens, all three of them, and one of them, of course, is with Muhammad Eunice, which is where the title of today's podcast comes from, Walking with Eunice, and you'll hear exactly what I mean by that whenever you catch that interview as it comes up. Stay tuned.
Okay, now it's recording, and what I'd like for you to do is introduce yourself and tell our audience about the club you represent and how it happens to be named the Moscow East Club.
Mm-hmm. Hello, I'm Marina Berdina. I'm representative of a club, Moscow East, and this club gets its name just because most of people came from the far east of Russia. So that's why the name of our club is Moscow East.
And how many members in your club?
There are 25 members in our club.
And Marina, what do you do for a living?
I'm a secretary in one international company, and I'm a secretary at our club.
And you also do some interpreting?
Sometimes, yeah. I do.
And you have a degree, though, in a whole different area, right? Your college degree?
Yeah, I study at Pedagogical University, so my major in methodology and teaching.
Of course, we Rotarians are all about service, and mm-hmm. your club recently, I think, cooperated with perhaps some other clubs in a very unique project for the developmentally disabled. Can you tell us a little about that?
So we have different projects, and our latest project was with people, disabled people, and they have Down syndrome, so they're Downs, but they can perform very good acting on the stage, so they're like professional actors, and some of them was filmed in some movies.
And so these people, though, the club actually was involved in their costuming, buying the material for their costumes and that sort of thing?
Yeah. We collected money just to buy some dress, some costumes for them, for their future performances.
I guess never ask a lady her age, but I'm guessing you're probably about 25 years old, and that's a fairly young Rotarian. What attracted you to join Rotary?
Very good question, you know. I was firstly introduced to Rotary movement when I was in Khabarovsk, and a good friend of mine, he's a Rotarian from Italian club, he's Italian, and he introduced me this movement, and I got interested in it.
And so, because someone asked you, and you saw the value in the movement, and now there are how many clubs in the Moscow area?
There are 11 clubs.
11 clubs
in
what?
Moscow.
Celebrity chef Gordon Ramsay and Will Ferrell both paid a heavy price for appearing in the UK celebrity soccer match for UNICEF, while both were forced from the game by injury. They'll reportedly be okay, but which of them was taken off on a stretcher? Well, Ramsay was the unlucky star who had to be given oxygen on the field and was carted off to the hospital after a collision with former All England forward Teddy Sherrington, who was clearly taking the game too seriously. We're sure the famously profane Hell's Kitchen star had an unprintable comment, but we'll just have to leave that to your imagination. Gordon was taken to the hospital after injuring his back during the game, his more genteel rep reported. He was released after receiving treatment, and although he's in pain, there shouldn't be any long-term damage. He would like to thank the medical team at the ground and the hospital for the excellent care he received. Faring only slightly better, funny man Farrell limped off near the end of the game, reportedly in a lot of pain. Uninjured stars involved in the charity match, which raised over $6 million, by the way, included Gerard Butler, Mike Myers, Woody Harrelson, and Edward Norton. More than 18 million people across West and Central Africa are facing a food crisis following erratic rains that have caused poor food harvests and water shortages. Action is happening now to avert the same kinds of crisis that happened in 2005, 2008, and 2010, which affected more than 10 million people. The response should not stop at meeting emergency needs, however. It needs to also tackle the underlying causes of the crisis like this to prevent them from reoccurring. By investing more in long-term interventions to reduce the people's vulnerability to external shock, we can work to break the hunger cycle in Sahel. We have an infographic that explains the problems in the region on the images page of our website, which is www.itsrotary.com. And to find out more about how you can help, locate your local Rotary Club using the Club Locator app on your iPhone or Android device. Wild viruses and wildfires have two things in common. If neglected, they can spread out of control. If handled properly, they can be stamped out for good. Today, the flame of polio is near extinction. But sparks in three countries threaten to ignite a global blaze. Now is the moment to act. By Ban Ki-moon, Secretary General of the United Nations. Despite the dramatic drop in polio cases in the last year, the threat of continued transmission due to funding and immunization gaps has driven the Global Polio Eradication Initiative, or JPEI for short, to launch the Global Polio Emergency Action Plan for 2012 and 2013. The plan aims to boost vaccination coverage in the three remaining polio endemic countries, Nigeria, Pakistan, and Afghanistan, to levels needed to stop polio transmission. Health ministers meeting at the World Health Assembly in Geneva adopted a resolution on the 25th of May that declared the completion of the polio eradication to be a programmatic emergency for global public health. Polio eradication activities have resulted in several landmark successes since 2010. India, long regarded as a nation facing the greatest challenges to eradication, was removed from the list of polio endemic countries by the World Health Organization in February. Outbreaks in previously polio-free countries were nearly all stopped. During that same time span, however, polio outbreaks in China and West Africa, due to importation from Pakistan and Nigeria, respectively, have highlighted the continued threat of resurgence. Failure to eradicate the disease could lead, within a decade, to paralysis of as many as 200,000 children per year worldwide. Polio eradication is at a tipping point between success and failure, says Dr. Margaret Chan, Director General of WHO. We are in emergency mode to tip it towards success, working faster and better, focusing on the areas where children are most vulnerable. The Global Emergency Plan will build on successes in India as well as the following key points. Intensified focus on the worst performing areas of Nigeria, Pakistan, and Afghanistan to increase vaccination coverage by the end of 2012 to levels needed to stop transmission. New approaches tailored to each country to tackle persistent challenges and improve polio vaccination campaigns' performance. Heightened accountability, coordination, and oversight to ensure success at every level of government and within every partner agency and organization. And finally, a surge of technical assistance and social mobilization capacity. Full implementation of the emergency plan is hindered by a funding gap of nearly $1 billion through 2013. We are all responsible for creating a polio-free world while we still can, says Chris Ellis, President of Global Development at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Achieving this goal is a critical step in protecting all children from vaccine-preventable diseases. We've got a great infographic that goes right along with what this funding gap actually looks like, what it means, and where it's all affected and impacted. And there was a great statement made by Bill Gates, as you can see accompanying with that infographic on our website on the images page at www.itsrotary.com. And the statement was, "We're all responsible for creating a polio-free world while we still can, but progress will continue only if we have political will and funds to cover a significant funding gap that is undermining progress to date. Fully funding polio eradication efforts can get rid of polio forever and strengthen the systems we need to help achieve the global vision of the decade of vaccines." As always, this week's show is brought to you in part by the fine folks over at Audible.com. If you haven't given them a try yet, you should. We've got a special link to go to Audible from our website at www.itsrotary.com. And from that link, you'll be able to get 30 days free. Nothing to pay for. It's all free for 30 days. And you'll get one audiobook out of that 30-day trial. I'm not sure why it would take 30 days to pick a book, although possibly because there's over 150,000 titles to pick from, everything from Walter Isaacson's new book about Steve Jobs that came out last fall. If you haven't been able to read that yet, haven't had the time, now is a perfect chance to get that book for free. Or any one of the three Hunger Games books, that entire trilogy, is available as an audiobook from Audible.com. And if you sign up for a membership, you'll get one free audiobook every single month. Of course, it's not really free because you'll be paying $14.95 a month for the service, but $15 a month, a brand new audiobook, and you'll be able to sign up. That is one thing you will get for free. When you do sign up for that plan, you'll get an audio version of the Wall Street Journal sent directly to iTunes, through your Outlook, however you decide you want to get these through Audible every single day. A daily audio version of the Wall Street Journal. All at your fingertips, go to www.itsrotary.com, click on the Audible trial link in the upper right-hand side of the page, and you'll be good to go.
We're now recording. Emily, would you tell us something about yourself and what you do?
Yes, my name is Emily Chukwepil, and I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the Foundation for Women Microcredit Program in Liberia, West Africa.
You know, I like to call these micro-enterprise. Can you tell the folks just exactly what kinds of businesses these people have that you finance?
Well, we finance petite businesses like vegetables, rice, used clothing, and we also finance services providers like running a midwife clinic or having a service provider that would braid your hair.
Okay. So most of your clients are men or women?
Most of them are women. In fact, 97% are women, and we also, the 3%, we help the disabled and beggars on the streets of Monrovia.
Now, do you have a very good repayment rate?
Our repayment rate right now is 99%, and it's all because the women are the loan officer themselves.
So what happens if one individual is not able to repay her loan.
Well, the women themselves encourages her to pay her loan. And in fact, sometimes they themselves would collect the money and pay it, and then she pays them in the future.
So how long has your program been in operation?
About 4 years now. It's a new program.
Great. Well, appreciate that, and I'll come back to you in just a second, but we're also a pleasure to have with us a representative from India and running a microcredit bank. Would you introduce yourself, sir?
My name is Mr. S. Devraj. I'm the chairman and managing director of the program called the Gramya Vidyal Microfinance.
And about how many clients do you have?
1.8 million.
Around 20?
1.8 million clients.
Oh, that's a lot. And how long have you been in operation?
Actually, our NGO is around 27 years old, but the microfinance program of it was only 3 years old.
And have you had good experience with the borrowers?
Yes, for the last 10 years, we were doing this lending business for the poor, and we have a lot of good experience with them.
Can anyone, since in India I asked this question, of any caste be able to borrow or just certain ones?
All caste and community can borrow this loan. There is no caste discrimination, religious discrimination.
So anyone, even the poorest, could come to you and borrow money?
Yes, yes. Even the poorest can come and anyone can come and borrow the money.
Could you give an example of some of the projects or some of the programs, enterprises that your people borrow money for?
More than 120 different enterprises, the rural enterprises, the women are borrowing. Like agriculture-based dairy program, rearing goats, rearing cows, and purchasing of cattle, purchasing of chickens and selling, and petty shops, like small enterprises, petty shops for which they are buying. And
well, I'll be right back with you, but I want to come back to Emily and ask something about the size of loans. Are these $150,000 loans, or what size are they?
No, we start with $100 and we go up to $1,000.
Do they have to kind of establish a credit record with you before you go to the higher amounts?
Yes, we do. We start with a small amount because I believe that if she can manage $100, she will be able to manage $500.
I think you're right. Well, that's wonderful. And the women, are they able then to do other things with the money they generate, like educate their children?
Yes. In fact, we also have a program that we look for funds. And if you are a good borrower or member, as we call them, then we give your children small scholarships to send them to school.
Well, that's wonderful. Now, I've heard that in some parts of the world, sometimes the girls are not able to go to school because they have to go draw water and bring to the village and so on. Does this allow the mother perhaps to have other ways of getting the water so that the kids can go to school?
Well, that's true in some parts of Liberia and Africa. But right now, we are getting out of that. As you know, we have a woman president in our country, and so she is working hard to eliminate that part.
I think that'll be a great change in the way things are handled, probably, with a woman president. I'd like to ask, getting back to India for just a second, what size loans that your bank makes in the microcredit world?
The same size as what Emily says, $100 to $500.
How do you spread the word about the microcredit program, or does it spread? Do you have to market it, or does word of mouth with villager to villager do the job?
Both the way, the community themselves. When they purchase buy a loan and they develop enterprises, they share with their neighbors. And that's how the neighbors come and become the member of our groups. Mm-hmm. And as well, our staff are also going and mobilizing, telling to the new clients about the microfinance program, asking them to join the program. Both ways.
talk to the reporter?
Sure, let's do that.
Okay.
Okay, how about the...
I have my cheat notes here, so
yeah,
I'll just
go ahead.
During your address today at the Rotary International Convention, you call microcredit banks the reverse of traditional commercial banks. How so?
Well, because everything we do in microcredit is just opposite of what the conventional banks do. They go to the rich, we go to the poor. They go to men, we go to women. They go to the city center, we go to the remote village. They ask for collateral, we say no collateral. They bring their lawyers, we say no lawyers. So anything you look at. And the banks, the conventional banks, are owned by rich people, usually men. Grameen Bank is owned by poor women.
So
everything, any direction you go...
It's just the reverse.
It's just the reverse.
Okay. Do you focus the use of microcredit banks in... can you foresee the opportunity, because you've opened a few banks now in America, that in rural America, which much of our rural communities are very depressed, that the concept that you've introduced in other parts of the developing world could be used here?
It could work anywhere, because it all began in the rural areas. In Bangladesh,
right,
we all do in the rural areas.
Yeah.
People are always asking, can it work in the city?
Mm-hmm.
So we are the experts in rural areas.
Okay. Well,
city is an exception for us, and we are showing that we can do it in New York City.
Yeah. Well, so to do this in rural parts of Missouri, for instance, you think would be a natural
Very natural. Because it was created for that purpose.
Then the third part of your speech today, if I got my order right, was talking about social business.
That's right.
And I wish you would explain just briefly to our audience what a social business, as you envision it, would be.
Well, conventional business is about making money. You go into business to make money for yourself. This is normal. This is accepted. That's what we are told. That's what we do. I'm talking about business to not to make money, but to solve problems.
Mm-hmm.
So you reverse the whole idea of making money into not making money, concentrate in solving the problem.
Well, I'm very
and
familiar.
That's a social business. It's
a
non-dividend company
to
solve social problems.
How would that benefit or differ from the traditional cooperative approach?
Cooperatives make profit, they give dividends.
Yeah. So
it doesn't qualify for social business.
Okay. Well, I appreciate very much. We've been speaking with Mohamed Yarnes, who is a worldwide expert in the area of microfinance, microcredit, and we appreciate very much your time today, sir.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Excellent.
Great.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. I have to say I'm very proud of our own District Governor Dan Hall here in Northern Missouri. He did a fabulous job tracking down Mohamed Yarnes and getting that interview for us. And as always, I am your host, Chad Waldo, and that's it for our show this week. Be sure to look over the show notes for the full articles and links we discussed from the show. There's a lot of things that didn't make the cutting room floor that we've kept in the show notes, so you can get a little bit more in-depth information there as well. Next week, we will be talking all things water, and we will have a talk from the water man himself. If you don't know who that is, don't worry. You'll find out in the next week here. And in a few weeks, we'll have a discussion on Rotary Future Vision and what that means for your club. That's a big topic of discussion that's been going around now for the last couple of years, actually. So stay tuned as we approach the end of the Rotary year and 1 year on the air as well. All right, let's try this for the 15th freaking time. We are all responsible for creating a polio-free world while we still can, says Chris Ellis, president of global development at the Bill... I'm going to screw this up every time I say this. I'm going to wind up saying Belinda Gates Foundation. I don't... Whatever.